Indiana minus 2.5 against UCLA in the Rose Bowl. Indiana's played two not great teams, but they've looked really good doing that. And if you're a great team, you got to embarrass the bad teams. UCLA's only played one game, and it was at Hawaii. They won, I think it was 16-13. So we don't know a lot about UCLA, but I know enough about Indiana to feel confident picking there. Texas minus 34.5 against UTSA. UTSA's best player from last season transferred to Texas, so that's never a good sign. Quinn Ewers is dialed in. Sark's got a ton of weapons there. I'm very high on Texas, much higher than I was at this before the season. Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake, joined by Matt. As always, today is Thursday, September 12th. What time does the football game start?
Probably 6 or 6:15.
One of our microphones is broken, the one I usually use, so we're having to pass the mic back and forth. So if it sounds a little bit clunky, that's why, but we're having a good time figuring out what's going on, and we think it'll be fun.
Yeah, no, we'll get it going. We might just each take longer periods of talking. So I do think, actually, though, there is a lot of, like, I talk for a minute and you talk for a couple minutes, you know, which is not a bad thing. I was just kind of thinking about that the other day.
Yeah, instead of just looking at my phone or the TV or my computer, I'm just going to have to be looking at you the whole time. And I'm also sitting much closer than I normally do.
Yeah, but it'll work out. You might consider holding the mic with your right hand. I don't know if that would make the passing easier.
That's a good point. I'll hold that and then hold the phone with my left hand. So normally I'd ask you if you're ready for the ick of the week, but so I don't have to pass the mic back just for you to say yes, I'm just going to read it. The ick of the week, last week was checking the mail, right? Yeah. So this is all the context I have. So do with it what you will. But the ick this week is jumping. Apparently jumping is a way to lose your girl.
Well, see, I would think that jumping would be sort of a good thing, you know, like in the context, you know, in the dunking, for example, long jump. I can see why someone would not be interested in high jump just because it looks weird, but they should be because high jumping is cool. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, you just don't want someone happy enough to jump up for joy, I guess.
Before we get into, I'm assuming we're going to talk about football. We actually haven't talked about what we're planning because I was on the phone with my insurance company and actual work stuff right before this. Speaking of jumping, though, we should talk about the track meet because we have to talk about a little bit of track. It's less of a meet, more of Duplantis beating the Norwegian dude. So we'll let Matt do a little track rant, and then we'll talk football and whatever else we want to talk about.
Yes, I mean, we could be talking about the Diamond League final. You know, we could be talking about some other things. But Mondo Duplantis, who set the world record in the pole vault, and Carsten Warholm, who is the world record holder from the 400-meter hurdles, although it was set 3 years ago, had an exhibition 100-meter sprint race, which was interesting. Because I told Jake this, and he said, oh, Carsten Warholm's going to win for sure. I didn't think it was for sure, but I was pretty sure Carsten Warholm was going to win. And what was interesting about the race is that they ran the same speed, or at least to my eye, they were running the same speed, but the pole vaulter got out of the blocks quicker. Now, what I thought was going to happen is I would have thought, you know, because a pole vaulter, the reason Duplantis is so good at pole vault is because he can sprint better than the other pole vaulters, but it's not getting out of the blocks, right? So I would have thought Warholm would have got out of the blocks better. You know, maybe Duplantis would have started to run him down, but I would have thought Warholm obviously would have had more speed endurance. But that was not the case. Duplantis just got out of the blocks first, and Warholm could not catch him.
I was truly blown away. So I guess I've been underrating high jumpers, not athleticism, but just like, I guess their speed. So good for him. I see you got your fantasy lineup pulled up. Did you want to talk about that, or are you just doing fantasy football while you're waiting for me?
Well, I was just kind of waiting, and I had it up. We can't actually, just because I haven't talked about fantasy football, this could be a good opportunity for me to brag because I led my league in scoring this week, which was fun because I did my Eagles strategy again, which people make fun of me for. But Saquon had three touchdowns. A.J. Brown had 20-something points because he had a 60-yard touchdown. Devonta Smith had 15. I couldn't get Jalen Hurts in the draft, though, because you're not going to get all those guys. So I picked up Baker Mayfield as a free agent, and he had I think he might have been the best quarterback in fantasy this week. Number four, really, even though he had four touchdowns.
Well, I was saying four touchdowns.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. So it worked out. And then, Nico Collins is my other receiver that I ended up with, which worked out good. So kind of killing it. I'm missing one running back, but I was able to get Jordan Mason as a free agent. Nobody had thought of that yet. So I'm feeling pretty good about my chances, at least, you know, until Christian McCaffrey comes back and I need to find another running back.
Yeah, Nico Collins was on your league's waiver wire, and I was like, stop everything. Grab him right now. He's really good. I'm glad you had a good week, because I went 0-6. I played Saquon in five of my six leagues. My Dynasty League could not have gone worse, so Romo Dunze got hurt. Christian McCaffrey obviously didn't play. I traded for Will Levis 2 days before the league, and he threw an underhand pass to the Bears so that for a touchdown. That wasn't great. So I'm trying not to overreact, but I'm down bad in fantasy. I'm glad you're doing good. 49ers kicked the crap out of the Jets. Embarrassed them. Fred Warner, proud BYU grad. Unbelievable. Just plays everywhere. Kyle Shanahan, so good on offense. My biggest takeaway, though, was right guard Dominic Puny, rookie from Kansas. Last year, really forever, the offensive line that's not Trent Williams has been a negative. And Dominic Puny of pushing people off the ball, making holes. He just balled out. So I tweeted in this, but Dominic, if you're listening, dinner is on me. Welcome to San Francisco. We're happy to have you. And Aaron Rodgers, just like Kirk Cousins, did not look mobile. We were talking about everyone just assuming these 40-year-old quarterbacks coming off Achilles injuries are going to be fine. And I don't think either of them looked very good. Rodgers better than Cousins.
Yes, no, Cousins, I ended up cutting Cousins for Mayfield, which ended up being a very good decision. I don't know if people are thinking this, but I think people saw Tom Brady play until when you get the microphone back, you can say how old he was when he finally retired, but certainly older than Aaron Rodgers is right now. So I think people just assumed that. I think people look, oh, Kirk Cousins is not a mobile quarterback, and therefore it's okay if he doesn't run. And also, like, I think, you know, maybe Kevin Durant has made people realize how, like, forget how serious Achilles injuries are. But, like, that's the reason that Kobe ended up retiring, is because of his Achilles. Even though it was 3 years later, he just really wasn't the same player. And that's, like, you know, as far as work ethic and being able to rehab from an injury, that guy would be able to do it better than anybody in the world.
Tom Brady was 45 and a half. I would have guessed 42 and been, like, flabbergasted. 45? Because he was still good that last year in Tampa. Like, he could have played if he wanted to. I saw someone, like, so I guess Rodgers has, like, a Netflix documentary, Netflix show coming out. And before this had even come out, but, like, someone just imposed a tweet over the Netflix poster. But some Jets fan was like, Patrick Mahomes is winning his third ring while my quarterback is in, like, some cabin without service smoking marijuana. When did Rodgers get weird? He was, like, I felt like he was normal for a while, and then it's all of a sudden he went off the edge.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't remember. I mean, maybe just if you're a backup quarterback, then people aren't paying attention to you. Maybe just him being in Green Bay, although Green Bay, despite being how small it is, I feel like is one of the most popular teams in the NFL. So I don't know. I mean, maybe he just, you know, as you get older, you kind of find yourself, and maybe he just found himself in a place that the rest of us aren't hanging out at.
I don't think we talk enough about how Aaron Rodgers followed Brett Favre to the Jets. We as a society need to be discussing that more. Like, what's going on there?
Yeah, seems like a weird one. Kind of for the Jets, because, like, I understand they thought that they were close, but, like, you know, bringing in Aaron Rodgers is a lot of baggage, and now there's going to be this whole Netflix show, apparently, that I didn't see. I have to feel like they're not very excited about that.
You know, and this is backtracking a little bit, but your Eagles strategy in fantasy football, someone did that with the Buccaneers and led their league in scoring. Like, if you have a good offensive team, if you have all the Eagles players or like all the Niners players, you have McCaffrey and Purdy and Debo and Kittle. Like, obviously, if you're doing with like the Browns or the Patriots, it's not great, but it's not a bad strategy if you're doing it with a good offensive team.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, and the other time I did this, it was with the Chip Kelly Eagles. But, like, with these Eagles here, they're going to score a minimum of three touchdowns, I think. Which doesn't sound like a lot. I think there's a lot of weeks where they're going to score more. But, you know, like, it's very easy to have a week where none of your receivers or your running backs get a touchdown. Right? Because, like, I don't know that A.J. Brown's going to get a touchdown every single week. Right, there's going to be one week where it just doesn't happen, right? So what it does is it kind of gives you a floor. And if you have the best offense in the league, like the Buccaneers or like the Eagles or, you know, even the Chiefs probably, Detroit would be another one you could get. Like, you know, you're going to score at least 100 points. Like, that's your ceiling. You're probably going to get 120, 130 a lot of the time.
Now, I'm going to ask you, normally I'd ask you this question, then let you talk, but since we're handing the microphone back and forth, I'll answer it first and then give it back to you. Was there anything, well, I was going to say this, who's the most disappointing team from week one of the NFL? To me, it's the Cincinnati Bengals, because Carolina already met my expectations of sucking, because David Tepper is there. But to me, the Cincinnati Bengals, that should be another team where, like, if you have all the Bengals, you're great. Joe Burrow hasn't looked good for a year in a game. You know, a lot of people say longer than that. Jamar Chase wasn't in camp all season. We're all, you know, camp, I guess. T. Higgins, you know, who knows what's going on. The vibes aren't there. And we talked about it before. Vibes matter, and the vibes are not in Cincinnati. Losing at home to the Patriots team, who most people thought would be the worst team in the league and probably still are, just not a great look. Now they have to go on the road to play Kansas City with an extra 3 days of rest for their second game. So I'm real worried about Cincinnati, and I'm going to blame the owner. I'm going to blame Mike Brown, who I'm 90% sure that's the owner's name, but I know he's cheap. And the same thing with Dallas. Like, they had a great game, but, like, signing Dak the day of the game, signing CeeDee just now, like, sign these guys 2 years ago. Do what the Eagles do. You save yourself a lot of money. It's just, like, these bad owners make unnecessary, like, stands or whatever, and combine that with, like, some injuries Burrow's had, and they just did not look good. So that was my most disappointing team, I think, by far, was the Cincinnati Bengals. Was there anyone that you would even classify in that? Because I feel like week one, it's hard to take too much away, but Cincinnati bummed me out for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Cincinnati, I think, is the best team that could be on the list for disappointing already. But I don't know. Like, I mean, the Falcons, I'm sure, are disappointed. I think that we sort of expected this, but I think the Falcons have to be disappointed themselves. And honestly, the Steelers, like, I was trying to look it up. I know they didn't have their starting quarterback, but I don't know. Like, I don't think Russell Wilson's going to be that much better than Justin Fields. And I'm not 100% sure the Steelers scored a touchdown at all. They were at 18. Yeah, they didn't score a touchdown. So that's got to be hugely discouraging for the Steelers. So both the teams in that game. And then honestly, like, the Jets, because if you trade for Aaron Rodgers, you think that you can win the Super Bowl. And, you know, I know that they forced 49ers to kick a lot of field goals, who they didn't have Christian McCaffrey, so we can talk about that. But I think to not make it closer with a 49ers team that does not have their best offensive player has got to be really disappointing for them.
Yeah, the 49ers made the Jets look like a middle-of-the-road team, and everybody on Monday is like, oh, the 49ers are the best team. Oh, they're going to the Super Bowl. And to me, as 49ers fans, like, first of all, this looked exactly like it did last year. So, like, why are we doubting them all offseason in one game, being like, oh, yeah, this is the team. This is the best team in the NFC. Second of all, yeah, the Jets were not good. If you want to be a Super Bowl contender, like, the Ravens last year, when the 49ers were on a roll, came in on Christmas Day and just buzzsawed the 49ers. The Chiefs beat the 49ers. The Bengals beat the 49ers last year. So if you're a good team, you can beat them. I mean, even bad teams. Like, they lost to the Vikings and Browns last year as well. But the 49ers make bad teams look stupid. And to your point about the field goals, I think that was more the 49ers than the Jets. I think Brandon Ayuk, also not in camp, dropped a pass in the end zone. It was a diving pass, but still something he should catch. I think that was on the Niners kicking all those field goals. And that was my biggest concern, was too many field goals in the red zone and not enough touchdowns. Defense did not look good for the Jets. The offense, I don't think, looked very crisp. I mean, we're talking about being in camp. Rodgers kind of missed a lot. So he's, you know, on the sideline talking to his receivers about, you know, routes and stuff. Like, you're supposed to do that in August, not on game day.
Yeah, no, so that, the Jets have got to be discouraged. So as far as a team with the highest hopes, Jets and Bengals for sure. You know, Bengals obviously losing to a much worse team. But yeah, I mean, I just feel like if you're a Falcons fan and you lose to a Steelers team that can't get into the end zone, like, you just got to feel like you've got a whole season of doo-doo ahead of you. So that's got to be discouraging. And as far as teams, you know, who were pleasantly surprising, you know, the Bears, I thought, you know, didn't look great. They had that second half comeback, which is awesome, and you like to see it. You know, falling all that way behind didn't necessarily convince me that they were going to be a great team. You know, Buccaneers looked really good, beat the Eagles, you know, a floundering Eagles team in the playoffs. But, you know, I think the Buccaneers are probably a better team than they're getting credit for. I don't know that they're going to get to the Super Bowl, but I think they might sneak into an – like, they would be the team that could sneak into the NFC Championship that nobody's talking about. So, Buccaneers. And then, yeah, those were kind of my big ones. I would almost say the Vikings, but they played the Giants, so it's kind of hard to say, you know, how excited we should be about them.
The Giants are another team I didn't even think about being disappointing, because that's just exactly what I expect from them. I cannot believe – there's a quote from Joe Sheen. He was like – I don't even know if this is real. I'm pretty sure it is. But it was like, well, you don't pay a quarterback $40 million to hand it off to a $12 million running back. And it was like, why they didn't pay Saquon. So first of all, I was like, well, don't pay Daniel Jones $40 million. Is the solution to that question. What was the other team you pointed out I was going to say something about?
The Buccaneers.
Oh, Buccaneers, yeah. Now, there's someone, when we were all making our playoff picks, no one really mentioned the Buccaneers, the defending NFC South champions. If Kirk Cousins can't move in the pocket, I think he ran 96% of his plays were just straight dropbacks from shotgun, no play action, no under center, anything like that. And my question with the Buccaneers was, Dave Canales, their offensive coordinator, going to coach the Panthers. I don't know why he did that. He shouldn't have done that. But they bring in Liam Cohen, who was at Kentucky, Los Angeles Rams, back to Kentucky, made Will Levis look good, made Stafford look good. I love Liam Cohen as a coordinator. I honestly couldn't even point. Like, I couldn't point him out in a crowd. But just, like, watching his games, like, that he's coached, I'm a big, big fan. So, that was my one question. And Washington's probably a bad defense, but I think Tampa answered it. And I think they're firmly in wild card contention, and I would say firmly in division contention with the Falcons. They as bad as Washington is, what I saw had less to do with Washington and more to do with the Buccaneers.
Yeah. Well, everybody in the division just played teams that we don't think are very good, including the Saints and the Panthers playing each other. So, yeah, obviously, you know, 47, that's the most points that anybody in the league had. But, yeah, you know, I think interesting to see Commanders. How did you think Jaden Daniels did in his first game?
It's just kind of what we saw in college. Explosive running, not throwing over the middle of the field, which is my issue with him. I don't think I saw a play where he got killed, but there were a couple runs. It's like, you can get down a little earlier, my man. But I kind of how it was expected. Terry McLaurin had a big play, but without Jahan Dotson, and you can argue, say what you will about Jahan Dotson, yeah, he's at least the second best receiver in Washington, or what was Washington. Now he's gone. So he doesn't have a lot of help, and he has a bad offensive line. I don't think we're going to learn a lot from Jaden Daniels, because when quarterbacks don't have that long to throw, and you only have one receiver you can get open, he's in a bad situation. So I didn't see anything unexpected. I didn't think he played bad necessarily, but I wasn't also like, oh, this is great. He's going to be good. I thought Bo Nix played all right. Not great. You know, one really bad throw you know, several kind of came check down Charlie at the end there, but made a couple plays with his legs. And Caleb didn't play that good either, but I'm not worried about any of the rookies. I'm a little worried about Marvin Harrison Jr., not from a long-term standpoint, but I feel like he has to be injured. Like, there's some chopped speeds from rookie receivers, and Marvin Harrison Jr. was like 16, and Tyreek is like 22. So no one ever thought he was going to be Tyreek, but 16 is like bad. I think it's like 1,630th out of like 1,799 receiver plays over the last couple of years. Like, really, really bad. So I think he's hurt because he did not play that slow at Ohio State.
Yeah, it is funny. You know, not to get back to fantasy too much, but I realize what is obvious to everybody is that by playing, you're more aware of what's happening around the league, because one of my the teachers that I'm close with drafted Marvin Harrison. I texted her. I was like, oh, that's a really good pick. And then he stunk it up. And because of him, she would have lost if I had not swapped Jake Moody for Jake Elliott with her. But anyway, yeah, to go back to him. Yeah, because it does. Yeah, it was just weird, you know, and it didn't. To your point, it didn't seem like rookie struggles, right? It did seem like something else was happening kind of beyond that. So disappointing, because I think, you know, he's probably the rookie I'm most excited about. He seems like, you know, even more than Caleb Williams, the one who's just going to be like superstar, best at their position in the NFL. So yeah, hopefully he can get healthy in the next few weeks. You know, you'd like to see what the real Marvin Harrison is like, especially because, you know, sort of rooting for the Cardinals with our old Eagles coordinator over there.
Yeah. And yeah, we got some great games. Cardinals, Rams. The Cardinals are favored somehow in that game, but I think that should be an exciting one. Falcons, Eagles, and Bears, Texans. The two primetime games are probably the best ones of the week, I would say. Buccaneers, Lions should be good. Playoff rematch. Some good NFL games. College wise, I'm 8-2. Went 4-1 last week in week 2 again. So should we talk about my picks, and then we talk about maybe just college football in general for week 3? Oh, I was waiting for your reply, but I have the microphone. So I'm just going to talk about my picks. So, sorry. I was like, in my head, I was like, why isn't he talking? I didn't write him down, but I did write him down. So, Georgia -23.5 against Kentucky. This is for week 3. This isn't last week. So, this is this week. Georgia -23.5 against Kentucky. I just think Georgia could, if it was like Georgia by 6 touchdowns, I'd probably still take Georgia. Kentucky looked real bad against South Carolina. Georgia's looked real, real good. Indiana -2.5 against UCLA in the Rose Bowl. Indiana's played 2 not great teams, but they've looked really good doing that. And if you're a great team, you got to embarrass the bad teams. UCLA's only played 1 game, and it was at Hawaii. They won, I think it was 16-13. So we don't know a lot about UCLA, but I know enough about Indiana to feel confident picking there. Texas -34.5 against UTSA. UTSA's best player from last season transferred to Texas, so it's never a good sign. Quinn Ewers is dialed in. Sark's got a ton of weapons there. I'm very high on Texas, much higher than I was at this before the season. Ole Miss -23.5 against Wake Forest in Winston-Salem. I think the defense is too good. Lane Kiffin's going to score a ton of points. I like Dave Clawson. I like Wake Forest, but they've just kind of lost a lot of talent. One of the I don't have the stats on this, but like in my head, they've lost more from the transfer portal than they've gained over the years. And then Alabama -15.5 against Wisconsin on the road. I'm nervous about all these, but the Alabama one's a tough place to play in Madison. They looked real bad last week against USF, but they looked bad the year before against USF as well. Both their offensive tackles played well. Caden Proctor, the stud true freshman, went Alabama, Iowa, Alabama. He didn't play at all. All reports are that he will play this week. If Caden Proctor is not playing, then I don't feel good about it. But if Caden Proctor does play, and the other tackle should be playing as well, I like Alabama to win comfortably in Wisconsin. I just haven't been impressed by – I think Alabama can just put up too many points offensively there. All favorites, which I don't love. Some big numbers, which I don't love. But it's kind of a weird week. Week 4 gets a lot better college football-wise. I'll pass the mic back.
Yeah, no, these are some interesting matchups. Obviously, it's right before the conference play is going to start. You know, I like all those picks, though. It's hard to go, different. Like, obviously, yeah, Georgia, you certainly hope if they're going to be the number one team that they would, you know, cover. It's probably not cover for the favored team. Oh, it is covered. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know anything about gambling, so. but, yeah, no, I am I want to move over. There's a couple other games that I like in a minute. But the Ole Miss-Wake Forest one is interesting just because this is like – it feels like Ole Miss has been on the cusp for about 10 years. And it's fun because it feels like this is like, oh, they're really going to break through this year. Like, this is the year where they might win the SEC. Like, it would be a surprise if they won the SEC, but it just feels like they're that close. The problem is, you know, there's – other, you know, you still got Georgia and Alabama ahead of them. There might be some other good SEC teams. So I guess, how good do we think that Ole Miss can actually be this year?
So I think Georgia's number one, and then right below them is Texas. And then I want to put Alabama and Ole Miss in that tier. I might have to put Texas just a half a tier ahead of those two. But I think those are the top four teams, and clearly the top four teams. And Ole Miss only has to play Georgia at home. They don't have to play Bama or Tech. Georgia has to play Bama and Texas. Bama and Texas have to play Georgia as well, obviously. So I guess Georgia has to play all those schools. But Ole Miss only has to play Georgia, and they get them at home. Yeah, because Bama plays Georgia in Alabama. I think Ole Miss is good. They have an explosive offense. Jackson Dart's one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Again, Utah native. Shout out to Jackson Dart there. USC commit. Played for Lincoln Riley at USC before Caleb came in. Feels like forever ago because now Caleb's in the NFL. He's at Ole Miss. No, they're great on defense. They really went for this year in the transfer portal. They brought in a couple defensive backs, edge rusher from Florida, defensive tackle from Texas A&M. So they beefed up their defense, especially on the defensive front, where I think they can hang. I don't think they'll beat Georgia, but I think they cannot get embarrassed like they did last year in Athens. I think they could beat Alabama or Texas on a neutral field. I'm not sure they'd be favored against Texas in particular. But if they won any of those games, I wouldn't be surprised at all because I don't think any of them have as good an offense as Ole Miss does. And I think the defense is good enough to give them a shot.
Well, that'll be fun. That was that might have been my favorite college campus that we visited on our trip that wasn't in North Carolina. Well, no, Arkansas I would put ahead of them. That could be a top five one year. I want to move, if we can, to BYU football, which partly because I have a feeling we're not going to talk about BYU football a ton once we actually get into the season. But they're playing Wyoming, which is, I think we mentioned this last week, a better rivalry for BYU than Utah State, for sure, just because of the animosity between the schools. There's been, you know, historic games between them. You know, the black players sitting out of the BYU game because of the priesthood issue. And it gets to be in Wyoming, too. If it was in Provo, I think I'd be less interested. But I think this is, you know, probably not as much as the Utah game, but right below them, this is the game that I'm interested more than any other BYU game the whole season.
Yeah, Wyoming is definitely high on the list of schools I don't want BYU to lose to. 100%, Utah State doesn't even cross my mind other than I don't want to hear them yapping about it. But Wyoming, San Diego State, Washington, all these like non-Utah rivalries where BYU gets up. Wyoming, you're right, they hate BYU. In Laramie, it's going to be a tough place to be. BYU's favored by like 8.5. Wyoming hasn't had a great start to the season, but in Laramie, even higher elevation than Provo, 8.5. Plus, you combine it that they do not like us. A little nervous about the game. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, because Utah and Utah State are playing this week, and all these Utah State fans keep chirping, and it's like, literally no one cares about you at all. 0%. But yeah, I mean, I don't have too much more insight on the Wyoming BYU game other than it is a rivalry game that I don't think people maybe outside of Utah or Wyoming probably expect. But because they used to be in the same conference forever, so they'd play all the time. Kind of opposite schools as far as, you know, really, I guess a lot of schools are opposite from BYU.
Yes, no. And it's definitely one of those games that, like, you're watching for the emotion more than the play, right? Because we're not, you know, too interested in Wyoming. They haven't had a lot of, you know, top tier talent besides Josh Allen, who was at Wyoming, oddly enough. Now we can, you know, when you've got, if you've got other games you want to talk about, we definitely should. But yeah, I'm sure you saw that we've got four schools moving into the Pac-12. So it will cease to be they're still going to call it the Pac-12, but I'm calling it the Pac-2 right now, and they're going to move into the Pac-6. It doesn't feel like this really moves the needle. You know, like, I think Boise State is the most important school, and that, you know, is just, it doesn't seem like it's going to be enough to get back to being a Power 5 school, or honestly even, you know, survive a whole lot longer. Or, I mean, I'm sure it'll survive, but certainly won't be what it has been for decades and decades.
Well, yeah, speaking, some people are calling it the 2-pack, which I like.
Oh,
2-pack. I think that's fun.
They can be the 6-pack now.
6-pack is great. Yeah. I don't know if you heard Matt say that, but he came out with a 6-pack, which I love. I saw a chart because it's like Fresno State, Boise State, Oregon State, Colorado State, Washington State, Oregon State. It was a flow chart of like which schools are not a state. It was like Boise State, Fresno State, and then like which schools are a state. It was like Oregon State, Colorado. It was funny. I don't get the point of this for the Mountain West schools, because I'm trying to confirm it. From what I'd read, it's like a $43 million buyout, including like the lack of notice fees. $36 million. So it's $18 million with 2 years notice. $36 million with 1 year's notice. The conference would also be subjected to a $43 million in poaching fees as outlined in the scheduling agreement between the conferences that resulted in Oregon State, Washington State playing 6 Mountain West opponents. So for Oregon State and Washington State, I think it makes sense to pay that $43 million. Why is for Boise State, is it better to play in Corvallis than Laramie, other than Laramie is a very tough place? I tweeted that. I was like, other than you'd get to miss road trips to Laramie. And I was like, well, it probably came off as offensive, but I meant it as kind of a compliment. Like, it is a very tough place to play. But so is Corvallis. Like, why don't get the point of leaving the Mountain West to go to basically the same conference?
Yeah, no, now I'm going to look up who's in the Mountain West. But yeah, no, like, Washington State is just not the top-tier talent that's going to make people think higher of Colorado State, right? Like, it just doesn't put them in important games, right? And that should be the reason that you move conferences, is, like, who are the important games that we're going to play against? And just Oregon State is not going to be that, and Washington State's not going to be that, even though they're going to have good years at some point. So, yeah, I hadn't quite thought of it that way. Does not really make sense. You're right. So, yeah, I mean, because, like, Utah State, you know, I know they're definitely worse than Washington State and Oregon State, but, like, I don't know how much, like, if you play well against them or you play well against Washington State, I don't know how much the committee's going to care about that.
That's what it's a lateral move, because it's not the Pac-12 anymore. It's not a power conference anymore. So it's just a lot of money. So they're leaving behind, and I won't be everybody, but Wyoming, Utah State, Air Force. I don't think, San Jose State is being left behind. Yeah. I mean, but they might, yeah, UNLV, Nevada. But some of those schools might join. Maybe they want to get UNLV and San Jose State gets in. So we'll see.
But at that point, why don't they just move Oregon State and Washington State into the Mountain West? And they can call it the Pac-12 if they want to, but I feel like that's just going to happen.
Well, yeah, because being in a 6-team conference, is that better than being in a 2-team conference? I don't think so. I don't get it for Boise State or really any of the schools. Boise State's been so desperate to go to a power conference, and it's like, well, you're not in one any still. So, well, they did. I don't want to say they look good, because I'll never say that, but Oregon didn't look good against Boise State in their game last week. That's the game I'm excited about, is Oregon State, Oregon. That's this week. It's in Corvallis. I don't know what this – I think it was like Oregon's favored by like 2 touchdowns or like 16 or something like that. And I haven't watched any of the Oregon State games. I haven't had time to get around to it, so I didn't make a prediction or a pick on that game. But I just have a tough time thinking – Oregon State's not just going to be fired. Like, that place isn't going to be electric. You know, unless Oregon picks it up, I foresee a tough time for them in Corvallis, where they lost 2 years ago. I think they lost 4 years ago, too. Or, like, because Oregon State's won a couple games in the rivalry recently. It's not as one-sided as you think it would be based on how good Oregon is. So that's the game I'm probably most excited to watch, especially because Oregon struggled out getting out of the gates. They are a much more talented team, and I do expect Oregon to pick it up. I haven't given up on them as much as some other folks have, but that's the game I'm excited about because I think there's a real chance Oregon State wins just off pure vibes.
That would be a lot of fun. It'd be a lot of fun if Oregon State won. Yeah, that would be a good game I'd like to see. It's a bummer that it's happening now at the end of the season as opposed to the end of the season. But also, like, I think for Oregon, it's, you know, it's good that they scheduled them because there's a lot of these schools that won't schedule their in-state rivals. And I think it's important to do that just for the idea of college football. So, yeah, it would be great. It's great that they're playing. It would be great if Oregon State ended up pulling up the upset. I kind of thought, yeah, Oregon might be a little bit better than that. So I would be surprised if that ends up happening. But, you know, in these rivalry games, anything can happen.
Anything can happen. You're exactly right. Now, I'm about to go to the top five. Anything I missed college football-wise or NFL-wise before we do that? Perfect. So we're going to do through week one, the NFL rushing leaders, but that was going to be impossible. So passing leaders is still hard. This is passing yards. It's still challenging, but I think it'll be more realistic for you to get five of these guys. So we're doing NFL passing leaders through week one. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the team that scored the most points was the New Orleans Saints. So I'm going to go ahead and say Derek Carr. No Derek Carr. We'll have to get 47 points and Alvin Kamara just have 400 yards. That's crazy. Okay. Okay. Well, Baker had four touchdowns. So let's say Baker. Baker's number four. Next, let's go. Brock Purdy didn't have any touchdowns, but they also got in the red zone a lot, so they could have six field goals. So let's go with Brock Purdy. No Brock Purdy. Now, this is just yards, or is this... Okay, yeah, this is just yards. Okay. If it is just yards, I kind of want to say Jalen Hurts. He did miss that whole first quarter, basically. But yeah, I ended up saying Jalen Hurts, so he's number five. So I've got four and five. So now I'm going to go to the Chiefs-Ravens game, and let's go ahead and say Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes is three. Could Lamar Jackson be two? No, Lamar Jackson. Yeah, I guess, yeah, Jake told me before the podcast started that Lamar Jackson was in the top five in rushing, so therefore he wouldn't be in passing. That makes sense. Okay, so I need two and one, which makes me think there's somebody just totally obvious that I'm missing. Jake's got a hint for me.
So they're not the best, like, quarterbacks necessarily, but they're part of the some of the best offenses in the league. They're still good, but they're not like Mahomes good.
Best offenses in the league. Well, Well, I know that the Houston Texans scored a lot of points, but Joe Mixon had all those yards, so I don't want to say him. And I feel like you wouldn't have given me that hint if it was Jordan Love. I almost said Jordan Love. So how about not Justin Herbert, not Aaron Rodgers, not Geno Smith, not Bo Nix, I don't think. Not Joe Burrow. I don't want to say Jacoby Brissett. I don't think that's right.
You have not named him yet.
Okay, so I'm going. I don't think I've named them yet either. I didn't even really pay too much attention to the Cowboys. What is Dak Prescott on this list? No Dak Prescott. So I'm going to give myself one more strike, and then Jay can reveal this to us. Best offenses. Jared Goff. No Jared Goff. Matt Stafford on there. Okay, Matt Stafford was two. Okay, you're going to have to give me number one then, because I just don't know who this could be.
For what it's worth, Lamar Jackson is six. So he missed the spot by 5 yards. So he almost was top five in both. Number one is Tua.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It helps when you have all those weapons to throw to. Yes. So, yeah, Tua had 338. A real bad week for passing overall. Yeah, Derek Carr only had 200. Dak only had 180. So, yeah, they were just running the defense, you know, doing their thing there. Deshaun Watson had more yards than Aaron Rodgers and Joe Burrow and Bryce Young. Bryce Young's really bad. Deebo Samuel. Oh, he's at zero. Why is he at zero? I guess he had an attempt. I don't know. So, yeah, Tua 1, Stafford 2, Mahomes 3, Baker 4, and Jalen Hurts 5. Next week, I'm going to be in St. George, Utah. You'll be here. So we'll have to do it, you know, virtually like we used to when I lived in Arizona. And hypothetically, we'll get Cy on, talk some NFL. We've been home to have him on, but just he's busy or we're busy. Before we sign off, anything, normally you just chime in here, but I got to give you the mic.
Not too much, but I think if we're recording next week, we're going to be recording on 18, Chilean Independence Day. So we'll have to make some time to talk about that.
Yeah, we won't be together for the ACO, unfortunately. So we'll have to, I'll make some Chilean food. Our mom will be with me down there. Then we'll get back. So happy Chilean Independence Day. Jordan Rayleigh, if you're listening, one of my Michigan companions, shout out to you. I know you're a big, big listener of the show. Appreciate everybody listening. Love talking football. It's so much easier to do this when there's football on just because it gives us a lot more content. Next week, we'll be back talking more football, college, NFL. Hopefully, I can keep my winning streak up with those college football picks. We'll talk to you guys next week.